Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
We've been away for a few weeks.
We've been playing hooky. Right. Well, it's summer, and you know, just like the city council, they haven't had been a lot of activity, but yeah, and especially when the city council meeting got moved to a Tuesday, right, and when we would have done a show.
Yeah, it was
last week didn't make sense.
That's right. It would have been the one midsummer meeting.
Right, that we would report on and stuff.
So that was scheduled for July 29th, but then they tried to put the agenda materials out on a Thursday.
1,700 and something pages?
Yeah, it's over 1,700 pages. It was like about that
unbelievable.
Thick. Yeah. And you know, and that became the excuse for why they had to actually,
in order to meet public, to post it or something.
Yeah, you need like a 48-hour notice.
Yeah.
But the truth is you don't have to put all the agenda items out according to state law.
That's interesting.
So why you just need to announce the meeting and make sure the meeting is noticed.
Which is what they had done.
Well, I think it's just that the standard practice at City Hall has been to have the materials available, on the Thursday night before a Monday meeting. But I don't think there's anything
I have not seen them on a Thursday. Well, I don't know.
You access them online. I mean, that's what
I usually online,
do.
Right. But I mean, I've gone there on a Monday morning and they weren't out, so I don't know.
What I usually do is we'll pick them up on Friday. Usually the city clerk's office would send them over to the senior center around noon.
You keep saying that, and I've gone to the senior center. I never see them. Do they disappear?
You got to ask.
They're not just out.
Yeah, and they don't put, sometimes they just put them right out there.
What about this big one? You think they had that one?
Yes, they did.
They did?
But it wasn't available Friday, so I think it was available on Monday. So
that's too much.
I do have a copy.
You're kidding.
I will be discarding 99% of
I am looking for some of the
there were a few things.
I do
keep some of the agenda materials. I periodically weed it all out. And just keep like a few interesting reports. Particularly like reports from the Historical Commission on landmarking of buildings.
Oh yeah, I just like committee reports just to see, go over if I hadn't gone to the meeting. But
yeah, and you know the thing is, in good practice that city clerks have done in the past, though, if they had just a voluminous amount of material, mm-hmm. like you know, they would basically say, if you want to see this stuff, it's on file at the city clerk's office. Just come in and see it. So
they
didn't necessarily have to make it all copies available.
I think this has set a precedent where maybe they cannot.
I think there's some talk about.
You could build a unit of housing for that problem. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, well, the thing is, virtually all of it is available electronically anyway.
I know, but you know, it's very hard to find things on a 1,007. I was trying to say, well, wait, what's this go with this order? And you got to go, there's no way. There's no good search mechanism for it.
Well, the other thing, too, is that very few people know what the sort of order of the agenda is to know how to look for it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons why for some years I put out my own little version of the agenda.
Yeah.
It's usually just a few pages long.
Yeah.
This one was extra big at about 10 pages or something.
I see.
It's basically it's like a guide, a little compact guide that says, you know, okay, then we go through the city manager's stuff. Then we go through the calendar section. Then we go into this.
Oh, well, that I know. But then there's attachments to stuff and descriptions of stuff. And you have to weed through all of that.
Yep.
And it's just very difficult.
Yeah, and I'll only put out the ones that I think are kind of interesting ones. I mean, if somebody's going to put out a curb cut application and it's got 50 pages of supplemental material.
Right, which is what a lot of this was.
There's no way I'm actually going to make it.
Well, there were three big committee reports on this, too, which I had.
That's actually what really
tipped
the
scales. And all the public comment about the affordable housing one. I mean, it was like, that must have been at least 50, 60 pages.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, but they ended up moving the meeting to Tuesday.
Tuesday at 5:30, right.
You know, and then it dragged on. I think the meeting went till midnight.
It did. I watched it.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway.
Yeah.
And they'll be back September 9th. But the thing is, meanwhile, there are some various committee things that are going on.
There were ordinance meetings. There was a lot. Yes.
Yeah. So
right after that, August 1st, was the...
There was the overlay proposal had its... what I think some were thinking would be its final ordinance committee meeting. But they ended up recessing the meeting.
Right.
And they will pick it up without any additional public comment.
Right. To basically discuss amendments, which I was trying to find. Is that written?
You know,
did you go to any of those meetings where... did you go to the Thursday meeting?
They
had apparently 8 documents that you could pick up?
I think I did not go to that meeting.
Okay, because I would like to get a hand of some of those.
Yeah, some of them were available at the council meeting.
But where would I find the amendments that were proposed? See, I was trying to find that.
Some of them were included amongst communications from city officers.
Right. I think Alana's had that.
So some of them were rolled in that way. And there was a late one from Quentin Zondervan that had some additional ones.
And where would that be?
Well, the paper copies were available at the council meeting.
All right, because you're saying those amendments existed before the August 1st meeting.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So that's what I need. And I know they're in that big packet, but to find it is ridiculous.
I'll tell you something. At the council meeting, there were people scrounging around through these few copies. Yeah. And it's a big stack of these things.
Yeah, yeah.
Just trying to find the one or two things.
Right, that they wanted.
And one person specifically said, do you know where I could find the Zondervan amendments for the affordable housing overlay?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, it's a late communication to the, you know, to from city officers, and that's where you should find it. And I went through it and found it.
So is that on your website? Do you have the public service, Robert? Can you post the amendments to your website?
I have the ones from Mal and McGovern.
Okay.
One from Zondervan.
And what about Carlone? Didn't he redline something?
I have all three
of them. An amendment?
If you go to the agenda, my agenda, all three of them there are
linked directly from there. I will look for that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, it's complicated.
Oh boy. It is very complicated.
Yeah. And one of the things specifically on that, the overlay, is that some people are saying, and I think it's probably accurate, that there were so many amendments happening, you know, furiously, relatively late in the game, that you know, how are you going to make sense out of this and actually feel confident that you're actually putting something up to be passed to a second reading that's actually consistent or intact? And I'm not sure that they can do that, but they'll try. I mean, it's become very political now at this point.
I know, and a lot of people that in public comment that are pro the I'm going to call it the AHO, not to be confused with ACA.
The Affordable Care.
Alexandra. That they don't want any of the amendments. They want it just as it is. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I would like some of the amendments. I want to read it again, but some made sense to me. But anyway.
Most of the amendments that I'm seeing really are just sort of to make it palatable so that people who would otherwise be voting against it would actually be agreeable. I think that's really what that's
primarily about.
Well,
you know,
a lot
of people are finding this like in the eighth inning of a game. And I don't think they have all the facts. I'm not saying either or. I'm just saying what I've heard on the street, and it was just recently, was that, and people are, they, I don't think they understand that it's not the same as any developer going in as of right. Because someone, that's what a friend of mine said.
What is true
There's
is
this thing on my corner, and they had it as of right because they didn't have to get a permit. I said, but that's different.
No, wait. No, what is true is that any developer as of right could take advantage of this, but they would have to build something that would be exclusively
in
subsidized.
In perpetuity. Plus, they have to go through many more guidelines.
That many more guidelines.
I don't know. Actually. Did you go to Affordable Housing 101?
And the thing is that the
funding is different.
Their ability to build bigger, denser, and covering more of the lot is significantly more than would be if they were just a developer wanting to just build a project, you know, that was not meeting the guidelines.
Well, I still think there's more restrictions.
That's the whole point of it. Is basically they were rig the rules so that is it written exclusively so that Homeowners Rehab and Justice Start or Sean Hope could be the developers? I think that was kind of the intention. But the thing is, you can't really write the rules that are specific to just three parties.
But you can make the requirements
right. So
in order for the HAP to be.
Right.
Onerous in a way, because they're used to having all those requirements where a private developer isn't.
Right, but the thing is, you could have a developer coming from wherever, and as long as they could make money building it and then basically turning it over to the city or to homeowners.
Without Affordable Housing Trust?
No, with all of those requirements. Mm-hmm. No, they could do it without the Affordable Housing Trust funds if they could make the numbers work, and I think the idea is that they're rigging it so that to make the numbers work. I mean,
okay, so I think if they could tweak that in a way that could prevent from the bad apples getting in, which I thought they could. I thought there was too many restrictions for anybody out there saying, oh, I'm not going to make. Plus, they can never sell it. They can never sell it for a profit. It has to remain affordable for lifetime. And how many people are going to like that?
Well, it depends on how the numbers work out. I haven't really worked that out.
That's all I'm saying right now.
I mean, my issue is right from the get-go been percentage of the city's housing stock should be subsidized. Yeah. And they asked me flat out at at the Envision Cambridge Housing Working Group, and I said, well, it dropped below 15%. I think we should target bringing, make sure it gets back up to 15%. But there are other groups like the Cambridge Residents Alliance who have quietly on the side expressed a desire to have up to like a third of all housing units be subsidized in the city, which I think would not be a good idea.
Well, when you say subsidized, does that mean affordable housing? Or is that what you mean by subsidized?
It's not market. It's not market.
Not market, yeah. That's not going to happen. Right. That's not going to happen. Not in any community.
Right. I mean, but I'm just saying is that there are political players in this game here who actually are kind of averse to the whole concept of private property. So the thing is they would like nothing more than to transfer as much of the housing stock in Cambridge as possible over into
But I think that group isn't necessarily people like Homeowners Rehab and people that are actually do this for a business.
This is what Homeowners Rehab does for a living.
I know, but no, but it's not. They're not Cambridge Residents Alliance.
No. But the thing is that the Cambridge Residents Alliance, not everybody associated with them. They're actually kind of in a political scheme.
I've been impressed by some of the people that work at Homeowners that have spoken. I just feel like they know.
No. The thing is that in terms of what they do, you know, if the goal is to have X percentage of the city be subsidized housing, then these are probably pretty good partners to work with.
Right, but that isn't necessarily their stance. Oh, I want to see 50% of this housing be subsidized. I mean,
their goal.
They just want to be able to build something without waiting 2 years of some neighbor appeal. You know, I think you got to get rid of some of that.
But I think it needs to be pointed out, Justice Hart is right now kicking off another gigantic project up on Ringe Ave where they're adding hundreds of units of housing. And so it's not like they're unable to build
housing. Of course not. There's been housing all over. People don't realize how much housing there is.
Yeah. So
that doesn't mean that
somehow a company like Justice Hart, which I always get confused, which is the one who already has like 6,000 units of housing in the city.
I thought 6,000 total since like the 80s. Because we've only built, 1,500 since the
just for the 1,000 change is basically housing that has either been built or preserved via the Affordable Housing Trust.
Right, which is great.
Which is something the city was sort of saying, well, that's a wonderful accomplishment. Right. And I sort of said, well, okay, fine. So you did that. You did inclusionary zoning. Yeah. You're now requiring that of all new projects, they have to be economically integrated so that it's 80% market, 20% subsidized, right? Subsidized through higher rents for the other units in the property. So, so we actually have a bit of a pretty consistent housing policy already in place.
We do, but
so what I don't understand is sort of say, well, why don't you think that's a good policy? Because a couple of years ago, people were saying we should be celebrating the number of units of housing we've either built or preserved under inclusionary zoning and the Affordable Housing Trust.
But wait a minute, those 1,015 are not just inclusionary zoning.
A lot of them are inclusionary, I think.
I frankly would rather see mixed income. Those aren't really mixed income. I don't care what you say. When you have $5,000 a month apartments, then you have 10 units of those can be for lower moderate. To me, that's not mixed income. But that's another story.
Well, I mean, it varies from project to project, to be sure.
It does, yeah. I mean, I think it's still but
I just,
that, but,
I just have a fundamental public policy dispute with this, is that I don't think that the sky's the limit should be the policy of the city in terms of what the fraction of subsidized housing should be. And basically, there is no provision in the proposed zoning change here that would put any limit whatsoever on it.
Well, except monetary.
Right. So the thing is...
So to me, that rules the day anyway.
Right. But the thing is, so you create the mechanism through which you can actually transfer residential property from private ownership into public.
Couldn't that residential person that owns that property refuse to sell? I mean, don't take it by eminent domain.
No, I mean,
if they want $9 million for some of those places, would be $8 million.
Well, I mean,
that may not be affordable, even with all that stuff.
So what will happen in some of the places in the tonier parts of town, I assure you,
the neighbors will buy it.
Well, some of the neighbors will buy it, or else
what
will happen is if somebody says, well, Justice Hart says, well, we've got this advantage, so we're going to drop X number of millions of dollars to purchase the property so we can do that. And then the developer who really, really, really wants to do a high-end project says, okay, I guess we just have to drop even more money onto and outbid them. And they'll do that, which will make that housing even more unaffordable. But
it can't be a high-end project if it has to be 100% affordable.
But the buyer who outbids just to start and the Affordable Housing Trust...
they still have to build 100% affordable, not high-end.
No.
That's not the way I understand it.
They build within current zoning. The thing is that every unit that they sell is going to be costing $2 million and upwards.
But then that's not an affordable housing complex.
That's exactly
right.
So in the tonier parts of towns, that's exactly what's going to happen.
So then it won't. It's
just a development, just like it's always been.
No, but
they don't. They won't. They'll simply outbid.
No, but it does. But I don't get it, Robert. What you're saying is that they can build that and sell for $2 million a unit and get away with this language. I don't see how that's possible when it's supposed to be 100% affordable. That's not affordable. $2 million
a
unit.
Nothing in this affordable housing overlay says that you must build that. You can build to within current zoning under the current rules.
Oh, that's not how I understand it. So maybe that needs to be clarified. No, I thought it was restricted to a muddied lake, an azure sky of deepest summer. No, I don't see that at all. Then why call it an affordable housing overlay?
To give an advantage to somebody who wants to go and build in the 100% affordable so that they would be able to compete successfully. But it's not guaranteed that they could compete successfully.
But right now,
they could still be outbid.
But they are doing that now in Cambridgeport. You see these boxes going up for $2 million a unit. So that's still going to go on.
Yeah.
So why would you see it over there? They're not going to get a zoning break for that.
Because out in those parts of town there, the thing is the property is just intrinsically more valuable.
Okay.
So they could get a much higher price.
I need to get more, because to me, that I did not think was possible, that they could outbid someone and then build what they want when it's not going to be affordable. So to me,
because they're not building under the provisions of the proposed zoning code.
Well, then that's...
They're building under the existing zoning code, which is not going away.
The existing zoning code doesn't allow for more units in those Tony neighborhoods, though.
That's right. So the maximum number of units that you can build under current zoning will become tremendously more expensive. Because they'll have to outbid some of the other companies. We need to let this go because I am not
understanding that part. I did not think that the zoning would specifically allow anybody to do anything in those areas.
And nobody's saying that.
Because that's already going on.
Right.
So,
it's just going to be, it's just that they'll have, if they have to outbid because they really want to build a project on Brattle Street, it's going to be even more expensive. You know, if they want to build it out.
I don't think those Brattle Street neighbors are going to want, even if it's $2 million a unit, they're not going to want that overdevelopment in their neighborhood.
That's right.
So, but I haven't heard any of that argument against it. They're all against the lower income people coming into their neighborhoods.
I don't think that's really the issue.
For some of them it is. Come on.
I know, some of the comments. I mean, the propagandists.
My daughter was appalled when she heard some of these comments of people coming in and said, who do they think they are? What snobs? You know, blah, 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 blah. And I just feel like there's so many different ways people are coming into this.
But if you have 80 or 100 people coming up to give public comment, the fact is you're going to have a few snobs come in and do that.
Yeah.
I think it's statistically 100% guaranteed, but it doesn't mean anything.
Well, it means something to somebody.
Yeah, I know. And then that's the part that'll get put up all over the press saying, see, everybody who has questions about this must be a snob.
No, there were some good responses. There were some good on the other side. I was kind of balanced. I'm just saying a few stuck out that you've clearly, to me, represent people who really haven't read the whole thing or really are just looking out. I don't know. Well, before we go, I went to a thing last night and Jan was there and Craig was there. It was something sponsored through WBUR where they had Vancouver, Minneapolis, and Toronto talk about urban policy. And do you know that in Minneapolis and some other places, they're taking their single-family zoning, which is 80% of their housing stock, and turning it into what we're talking about.
Right.
But in Canada, they're doing it. And you know why people don't complain, one of the people said? Because we have better health care and free education, and people just accept certain things.
But it's an interesting thing. Every time there's a newspaper article comes out in the New York Times or elsewhere about the fact that people, like in Seattle or Minneapolis, they're eliminating the exclusivity.
Well, it wasn't Seattle. This was Vancouver, Canada.
Eliminating the exclusivity of single-family zoning, which I think is a good idea.
It's happening all over the country, so it's not just here.
Right, but the thing is that then what happens is, you know, one of the propagandists from around here picks up on that and says, see, we have to eliminate this in Cambridge, we have to eliminate this and that, where they refuse to acknowledge the fact that like 85%
Oh, we already have
of Cambridge's yeah. already multifamily.
Right. Yeah, one of the so women they're familiar with, so they don't right. have three deckers. So they didn't know what that
is
was.
Is the goal
right.
to obliterate yeah. every right. single family home in Cambridge? No. I don't think that would be no. a good idea.
Well, first of all, we don't. I'm sure if you look at the housing stock, it isn't 65-70% single family homes, is it? No, it couldn't be.
In Cambridge, there are actually relatively few single
exactly.
family homes.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah, it's actually the smallest part of the housing sector here.
Than Minneapolis, for
right.
sure.
So, but the thing is, yeah. is that, you know, it kind of bothers me a bit when somebody yeah. takes what is fundamentally a good idea. I mean, there are a lot of the suburbs yeah. around Boston that have single family zoning.
It's like comparing apples to oranges.
Right. And then but the thing is, the fact that if you want to make a town that doesn't mm-hmm. allow anything but single family zoning, single family houses, and you want to change it to require them to have some, at least a fraction of the city or town have apartment buildings, which I think would be exactly the right thing to do. That shouldn't translate in any logical person's mind to the notion that somehow in a place like Cambridge or Brookline or Somerville or whatever, that every single family home should somehow be demolished to be replaced
by multiple homes. No, of course not. No one's saying that, but let's face it.
Some people are.
I know, but the policies over the last 100 have been racial lines have definitely determined a lot of zoning. I mean,
in
stuff is
some
about
places,
a
but
lot
I don't think there's any.
Maybe not as,
there is no evidence to support. Well, in fact, I've seen explicitly written statement that was not really.
Oh,
the
so
way
you
it
go against maybe not Cambridge, but in
no,
general,
but that's what we're talking about in Cambridge. Yeah. You know, the thing is, yeah, every public policy that restricts has been abused mm-hmm. or used wisely. You know, Cambridge mm-hmm. actually has zoning dating back to like 1926,
yeah.
and I don't think that any of the patterns, of, you know,
no, I agree. We have
a,
I mean, if you look at this city, we have so many different kinds of. We have apartment right. complexes. We have three families. We have two families.
Right.
We have singles.
Right.
I
find it very interesting that there are a lot of the people who are bemoaning the fact that there's high income people in parts of the 02138 zip code or up in North Cambridge.
What are you talking
Cambridge
about? Down here, who do you think's living in these $5,000 a month apartments
my
down
point
here? East
is,
Cambridge, Kendall.
My point is that certainly even in the 40 years I've lived here, those very same neighborhoods were working class Irish neighborhoods.
Right.
Of middle income, whatever.
Union job, maybe,
and it's just
whatever.
That over time,
right.
it has nothing to do with zoning.
We're not talking about Brattle Street.
What has happened, right.
It's
what has
else.
Happened
yeah.
really is just that there's been people coming to get, you know, looking for jobs in mm-hmm. either in the universities or in the high tech economies of mm-hmm. Kendall Square, mm-hmm. and they are successfully competing for the housing. So, areas that use, including my neighborhood too, which was.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very mixed income is sort of getting higher income because people are just successful.
But also people bought two families because it was able a way to stay, you know, you could afford, you got a rent.
Back when there were multifamilies.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, that's
well,
that's how I was able to stay in Cambridge.
Unless people changed into condos.
Right, because you could,
true.
Right, well, it was the condominiumization has actually removed the biggest means through which middle income people could stay in the city.
No, you're absolutely right.
I think it was a fundamental error to basically allow it. I mean, I'm not against
condominiumization. Except condos people could afford to buy versus they couldn't afford to buy a
house. Right, but if you were talking about a large-ish apartment building, which is not like the little multifamily two or three family that some plumber would have purchased once upon a time.
Right.
Right. But if you're talking about a building that had 40 units here, that was not like the two and three family.
Yeah.
So if those all became condos, I don't think that would have been a bad thing at all. And I think that's actually been generally a
but
good
that
thing.
But that has what's happened a lot.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
But why
so
is that
I
a good
no
thing?
Issue.
You're taking away rental housing.
No. That's fine because the thing is that people they now have a means to sort of like climb up the ladder guarantee their economic security, right? And the fact that you took away some rental housing is sort of, it doesn't matter. That doesn't
matter.
Well,
some people would argue that.
Yeah, but the thing is almost all housing that's been built in Cambridge majority of housing that's been built in the last decade or so has not been for condominium sales. It's been for rental. So there's actually been a dramatic increase in the number of rental units.
By who?
And a dramatic increase
rental
in the
units,
number of
who's by, I
subsidized
mean, really?
Because
it seems to me it's all been condo. Units high-end, though. High-end rental units.
Well, market, right. So when the thing is that virtually every stick of housing that's ever been built, when it's first built, is when it's usually most expensive. And then, you know, if
you
build
them... Oh, you think these are going to change?
Over time, sure.
I doubt it.
You know, so many of these buildings that are being built right now that are, you know, being where they're charging ridiculous amounts of rent will one day just look like some other apartment building.
Maybe, but they still have a lot of costs that they have to recoup and they even need those rents to come in.
Yeah, so in the upfront years, they'll definitely...
We'll see. In 5 years, we'll see what the rents are. The rents have never gone down in Cambridge. So not that I know of. You can't compare your situation.
No, they've gone. And it depends on where in Cambridge. Like, for example, out in Concord Alewife right now, rents are going down.
But you're talking about where there's an overabundance of those tall buildings?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm talking about...
Right. Very few people seem to be thinking in sort of the big picture, the 5-year, 10-year horizon.
But a lot of people don't want to live in those places. If you're a single or a couple, yeah. But, you know.
Right. Well, then, but that's why it will become more affordable. I mean, just like the basement apartments of yesteryear were the ones where people who I knew when they needed a cheap rent place, that's where they
went. Yeah, but again, don't compare that to those towers in Alewife.
Right. Well, the thing is, they're marketing them
Those basement apartments, nothing at least on the 3-family, 4-family level has come down. That's all I'm saying, at least in neighborhoods.
Well, and nor will it, because right now there's a dwindling stock of those that type of housing, and it's
and
pretty
people are
desirable
getting
housing.
Top dollar.
Right. I mean, the thing is, if you have a 3-decker that has a 6-room apartment on one of the floors or several of the floors, those are family size apartments, and
you can get
we don't have too many of them.
$2,800 a month, $3,000
at least. Yeah. Absolutely. You know. So anyway,
it's not affordable to most families.
Right,
so.
But I don't really think that there's much wisdom going on up at the council level in terms of trying to envision what the long view of this is in terms of housing.
Well,
you know, it's still mainly driven by sort of a command and control mindset about, you know, we got to rest these units over
here. Once
you
make a zone, can the zoning be provisional for 2 years to try it out?
The right way to do this overlay would be to put in a sunset clause.
Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, basically says, okay, we have an emergency. Okay. Under emergency situations, you put in emergency rules.
Okay.
And then after some period of 3 to 5 years.
Is that agreed to or not?
No. The thing is that what was being suggested, and now they've been replacing it with a review after 3 years, which means precisely nothing.
Well, maybe then that has to be stronger language, because I would agree with that.
They do need to change
that. If they could
that.
Do that, I would go along with that.
Okay. Make it a sunset.
Okay. You know,
if you're going to pass something, so. Anyway, we'll talk about elections.
Other elections, right. We've covered
we'll be back
the
back in
AHO,
a few minutes on Cambridge
ACO,
Inside
AHO.
Out.
AHO. All right.